Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Oh, man, I love this song. Aaron, thank you for playing at the top of the hour. I tell you what, that is my favorite song in the history of sports right there. Luther Vandross and One Shining Moment. My goodness, folks, UConn, the UConn Huskies are national champions. What a moment it was. Oh, my God. I love that song, man. One Shining Moment. I see. All right, I'm about to start going on. I'm about to get my Luther on right now here. All right, folks, again, we have an incredible show for you today. We're going to dive into that One Shining Moment for the UConn Huskies as they, wow, what a moment last night as they topped Kentucky. Shabazz Napier completely broke down in tears. Many players just hit the floor, started celebrating. The nets were cut down. What a moment it was. And I tell you, what a game it was, too. It was a tight one. I'm heading down the stretch. At one point, it was a one-point game with about 8 minutes left. We're going to talk about UConn's incredible run. And for this program to come back after being suspended last year on academic probation due to grades and whatnot and having a year off and to come back the way they came back, I mean, let's be honest, nobody, I'm assuming in this area at least, had UConn winning the whole thing. I know I didn't. It was an unbelievable run, knocking off powerhouses like Michigan State, like Florida. I mean, an unbelievable run. I mean, nobody even fathomed UConn to go all the way once this tournament started. But what an unbelievable program. What an unbelievable group of young men who decided to come back this year and believed the entire season that they could cut down the nets. We'll dive into that game, break it down, and talk about the game last night. Again, we'll open up our phone lines throughout this entire show, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. And also in just a second, we'll talk a little Detroit Tigers baseball, baby, as Clyde Weir, Detroit Tigers scout, will join me in just a few moments to talk about the season that the Tigers are having right now as they have just started the season. And also Evan Reed, if you haven't heard about that, we'll talk about that in our quick hit headliners. But Clyde will be talking about Tigers in just a second later on in the show. And also, it is the 40th anniversary of Homer 715 for Henry Hank Aaron. Gotta love that. We'll talk about that incredible moment, which he surpassed Babe Ruth. We actually get to hear a pretty cool clip from the legendary Vin Scully as he made that call through the radio airwaves. And our Top 5 Tuesday today is centered around Joe Dumars, who is currently the Pistons president of basketball operations. But I tell you what, there's some breaking news that he may be stepping down very, very soon, as soon as this week, actually. So our Top 5 Tuesday for today is the top 5 worst decisions of Joe Dumars' career. That should be an interesting one. Again, I'm curious to know what your list looks like. 517-355-9527. We'll dive into that and so much more. But before we do, here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this April 8th, 2014. Again, the UConn Huskies, they are national champions. Shabazz Napier, he turned in another all-court masterpiece on Monday night to lift the Huskies to a 60-54 victory over Kentucky's freshman and bring home a championship. Now, Napier had 22 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and his partner in crime, Ryan Boatwright, finished with 14 points. The victory comes only a short year after the Huskies were barred from March Madness because of grades problems. That really stoked a fire that no one could put out this year in 2014. Again, the UConn Huskies are your national champions. We will talk about it in just a sec during our second segment of today's show. If you want to give your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527. And tonight, the UConn women also have an opportunity to win a national championship as they will take on Notre Dame for all of the marbles. So that should be a great one tonight. Both programs are undefeated. A victory by UConn over its rival would be the ninth of Geno Auriemma's career, breaking a tie with Pat Summitt for the most all-time. How about that? So a lot on the line for UConn and Geno. Now, tip time is set for 8:30 p.m. on ESPN. And Oklahoma State sophomore point guard Marcus Smart, he has declared for the 2014 NBA draft. Smart averaged 18 points, 5.9 rebounds, and a little over 4 assists in 32 minutes per game this season. He earned all Big 12 honors. He tallied 23 points and 13 rebounds with 7 assists in Oklahoma State's first round loss to Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament. His sophomore year was marred by a 3-game suspension that followed an incident with a heckling Texas Tech fan. Now, as a freshman, Smart took home second team All-American, also Big 12 Player of the Year, and all Big 12 honors. So there you have that again. Oklahoma State sophomore point guard Marcus Smart will be heading to the NBA. And again, Pistons president Joe Dumars, he is expected to resign before his contract expires on July 1st, a 28-49 record after acquiring high-profile free agents Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings appears to be Dumars' last big move of an up-and-down tenure. Now, he guided the Pistons to the 2004 NBA title and the 2005 finals, but the team hasn't made the playoffs since the 2009 season. So, again, our Top 5 Tuesday for today is the top five worst moves by Joe Dumars during his tenure with the Pistons. I'm curious to know what your list looks like. There's so many when I was going through my list, but I'm curious to know what your list looks like. 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls throughout the hour. And the Pistons are back in action tonight as they visit the Atlanta Hawks at Phillips Arena. Eliminated from playoff contention, the Pistons may be better off losing their remaining games because Detroit's pick in the 2014 draft is top eight projected right now. Otherwise, it would go to Charlotte. Now, the Pistons currently have the eighth worst record in the NBA. And the Red Wings will look to keep their playoff hopes alive in Buffalo tonight when they face the Sabres. Detroit is currently seventh in the Eastern Conference standings, a point ahead of Columbus for the eighth and final spot. Now, the Devils and Maple Leafs are also lurking around, both four points back of the Wings. Now, the Sabres have the worst record in the Eastern Conference, and Detroit will look to take advantage with games against Pittsburgh and St. Louis looming. And tonight, the Detroit Tigers, they travel to L.A. to take on the Dodgers in a 2-game series. Detroit is coming off a 3-1 loss to the Baltimore Orioles on Sunday, falling 1 game short of a 3-game sweep and keeping their undefeated record. First pitch is tonight at 10:10 p.m., and in just a second, we'll be talking with Clyde Weir, who is a Detroit Tigers scout. We'll be talking all Tigers with him in just a second. You do not want to miss that interview. And in shocking news, Detroit Tigers relief pitcher Evan Reed is under investigation for a sexual assault incident that took place in March 30th. Now, a 45-year-old woman reportedly told police that she had met Reed at Fifth Avenue Bar in Royal Oak, and she was later drugged, coming to a Motor City Casino hotel room while being sexually assaulted by Reed. Now, Reed has not been charged as of yet, and there is no warrant for his arrest as he travels on the Tigers' road trip. All right, and the Lansing Lugnuts home opener is tonight at 7:05 p.m. against the Quad Cities River Bandits. Tonight features a dollar deal day at Cooley Law School Stadium, $1 hot dogs, $1 ice cream sandwiches, and $1 fountain drinks. It should be a great time, and it looks to be a beautiful day here in mid-Michigan, and the sun is shining, the birds are chirping. Oh, gotta love it. Gotta love this time of the year, folks. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527. And also, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Again, we're asking you to call in on our Top 5 Tuesday subject. Each and every Tuesday, we list a top five sort of topic in the sports world. And, of course, with the report of Joe Dumars possibly stepping down as president of the Pistons basketball operations, we are asking you to call in and give us your list as we list some of the top five worst moves by Joe Dumars. That should be an interesting one. All right, the number again, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, let's get to our guest for today's current sports. He has been on the show before and a great friend of the show, Clyde Weir, who is a Detroit Tiger scout. Clyde, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Al. The sun's shining, and we're talking baseball. It can't get any better.
You gotta love that, Clyde. I'm telling you, this is one of my favorite times of the year because, you know, the summer's about to kick off. Spring is right here. Oh, you gotta love it. It's no time better during the year than this one right here, Clyde. Now, Clyde, I got to ask you, now the Tigers have started off the season pretty well so far, only one loss. Of course, the season is certainly in its infancy, to say the least. You all know a baseball season is certainly a grind, to say the least. Now, the first two games, two walk-off wins, exciting stuff. I got to ask you, Clyde, is this team better than last year's, just looking at it?
Well, I'll tell you what, Al, as you say, it's pretty early in the season to probably get a real good feel on that. It's certainly a different type of ball club when you look at last year's team that was built around power and starting pitching, and we had a good year, and unfortunately we didn't get to the World Series after a tough series with the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
And so this club is going to be very interesting to follow in that it's built on speed, defense, along with starting pitching. So certainly a dramatic shift in the way we've been built over the last few years. I hope it's a better club. If the last year's club got us to the playoffs, maybe this one will get us to the next step and back to the World Series.
Yeah, that is so true. And, you know, with all of the success that this ball club has had these recent years, of course, I mean, just coming just short of winning the World Series, of course, a few years ago, and then last year, of course, a series to the Red Sox. I got to ask you, Clyde, is it kind of a feeling in Detroit right now that it's either championship or bust for this ball club?
I think so, Al. We've set the bar real high, and it's very similar to, you know, currently the Michigan State sports in football and basketball. With success breeds future success, and we got to the series in 06. We got there in 12. Last year we were knocking on the door. We had some bullpen issues that hurt us late in that Boston series. So I don't think it's unrealistic to think that this club is built to win, and built to win right now.
Yeah, that is so true, Clyde. Now, I got to ask you, with the injury to Jose Iglesias, I mean, how big of a blow will that be for the Tigers? And for those that don't know much about the man who will be replacing him and Alex Gonzalez, Clyde, what type of player is he?
Well, he's a seasoned veteran, I will say that.
Right.
He's 37 years old. He's had a great career, but he's an older Iglesias. When we got Iglesias, he is a young, outstanding glove man who can swing the bat a little bit, and losing him hurt severely. That losing that key position, and so bringing over Gonzalez was a guy that, you know, originally we had made a trade and had Lombardozzi there and some other people as backups. Well, Lombardozzi was not a true shortstop, so when Iglesias went down, Mr. Dombrowski had to do some trading at the end of the spring training, and he had a history with Alex Gonzalez, who is a veteran who you want to put in there, who can make the plays and hopefully offensively give us enough to get us by and do the job and see how long he can, you know, fortify that position.
Right, and right now, Clyde, is looking like Iglesias. He will probably miss the entire season, right?
That's probably going to be the case. You know, you're always optimistic, but in Jose's case, it's a young guy like that. They're going to err on the side of caution, and with Romine as a backup, Andrew Romine, another shortstop we got,
mm-hmm.
you know, right now, and we'll see if they can do the job for us there. But it was a severe blow, and it was sort of a tough spring that way, Al, in that we also lost Rondon, who was
right.
Bruce was one of our key shorts, short relief guys that we thought we could use in the eighth inning, and so that really hurt along with Andrew Dirks. So
right.
It was a tough spring from an injury standpoint.
Yeah, that is very true. Hopefully they can get things rolling. It's good that the season has started now so they can try to develop that chemistry now that they've lost with those injuries. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Detroit Tiger scout Clyde Weir. Now, Clyde, I got to ask you, because you're looking at last season. I remember having you on last season and us talking about Justin Verlander. Of course, he didn't have the type of year that he had 2 years ago where he really turned heads. Of course, he was hands down the best pitcher in baseball. But, you know, when the playoffs hit, though, he was vintage JV. He's always showed up in the playoffs. As far as the regular season goes for Justin Verlander, do you expect another regular season decline for JV or improvement in that area?
Well, based on what I saw in spring training, Al, I think he's going to be a little bit similar to the Justin Verlander we're used to seeing, where he dominates and is able to, you know, use that fastball to command the strike zone and just be a real dominant ace, head of the staff guy that he is. Mm-hmm. Last year was a little bit of a anomaly, like you say. You know, he was 13-12, and it wasn't the Justin Verlander we're used to seeing. But with that said, he still had some good outings, and he is, like you said, the kind of guy that you want to run out there in the playoffs as your number one guy. And I think he'll be that for us again this year.
And, of course, I have to bring up, of course, the guy who I mean, he's my favorite player in baseball, Miguel Cabrera. He's certainly a freak of nature. Hopefully he stays healthy this season. But what's the season outlook? How are you looking in spring training as far as Miggy is concerned? And were you surprised by his 10-year, $292 million deal, Clyde? Man, that's a lot of moolah.
Yeah. It's hard for, you know, I'm showing my age here, but it's hard for me to comprehend those kind of numbers. I guess if you're going to give that kind of money to someone, Miggy has proven with the track record he's got, and he's such a special player that the club decided that they wanted to lock him up to the point where he's going to be a Detroit Tiger for life. And I know some of the thinking was, let's not wait till next year when his contract ends and then he's being shopped around and his agent's talking to other clubs. We know what we got. We know we want him. Let's sign him 2 years before his contract ends. And I think it's a great strategy that Mr. Dombrowski signed him. And and he used, like you said, Al, he's a special guy. He can hit the off fields. He's got just unbelievable power, and he's just a real force in the middle of that order.
Now, Clyde, I got to ask you, you know, when you talk about 10 years for $292 million, I mean, big contracts like this, something that I'm always weary of is that, you know, maybe the player may get fat and happy to a degree. Is that kind of dangerous in that regard? Because we've seen it happen with, you know, the A-Rods of the world. I have to bring him up. But in Miggy's case, it seems like he's just kind of a blue-collar, worth ethic type of guy that won't let that enter his mind and will always work his butt off.
Yeah, I agree, Al. Miggy is a you know, that kind of a makeup person, and when we're scouting, that is something that we look at and delve into, is what kind of character do we have, what kind of makeup does he have. And in Miggy's case, he loves the game, he has a passion for baseball, and I don't see him at all being the kind of guy who's going to be satisfied per se with numbers and using your words, becoming a little complacent. If you know, I think the long-range concern with Miggy is at some point he may have to move from first base to DH. We don't know that, but if that's the case down the road, you know, we're talking quite a ways out. That could happen, but, boy, it's a pretty good bat in that hole.
So, yeah.
I think everybody that knows him is very, very comfortable with his passion for the game, and he's a very smart guy. He's just an unbelievably intelligent baseball player.
You know, and Clyde, now with Prince Fielder, of course, no longer being a part of the Tigers organization, Victor Martinez is kind of that cleanup guy next in the lineup as Miguel Cabrera. You know, just kind of that guy trying to fill that void of Prince Fielder. I mean, how is V-Mart approaching that that role, you think?
I think he's relishing at it. He's another guy that loves baseball, is very passionate about being successful. He's a real force in the clubhouse. He's the kind of guy that you really like, because he can settle people down. We've got some younger players, and Victor is, to use a baseball term, a professional hitter. He's just, if you watch him on TV or at the game and you see his quality at bats, he knows how to work a pitcher and he knows how to work the count. And while he's not going to be the big banger home run-wise that Prince was, he gets quality at bats, and he's more of a guy that's going to hit the ball in the gaps for doubles and things of that nature. But he's a very good DH, and he's also going to do a little catching, play a little first. But I see him as a real strong number four hitter for us.
Certainly excited to see how he adjusts to that role. Now, I want to talk about Max Scherzer real quick, Clyde. When you talk about Max Scherzer, he rejected his contract extension that was on the table that, assumedly, looking at reports, would have put him amongst one of the highest pitchers in the game. Do you see the Tigers offering him more moolah as time goes on?
Well, right now, Al, they've sort of taken a step-back approach throughout the whole organization, and as far as Max has taken the same one. Let's play the season out, which means by no means are the negotiations not going to continue at some point. We want Max Scherzer in our organization. He loves the Tigers. It was just a situation where, and I can't speak for anybody other than my own opinion here, that he just felt that it wasn't what he was looking for at this time, and he's the kind of guy who's a very strong performer and decided to, and you have to respect this, say, okay, let's let the season play out. Let's see if I can duplicate the year I had last year and then see where we're at. And so it's, I give him credit for it. And he's, you know, he's pitching for us tonight and he had a good first start. And I have a hard time turning that kind of money down myself. But I'm so, you know, like I said earlier, I'm old school, and when I see that kind of money, and it was a very fair offer, and he said that as well, it wasn't like anybody was offended or upset by it. It was just a situation where it just didn't get done right now.
So, Clyde, ideally what this comes down to is Max wants more money, and he's going to hold out to see it, like you said, if he can duplicate or even have a better year than what he had last year, which would be insane in the membrane. But if he does, he wants to prove his worth, that he is worth more money than what they had on the table originally, right?
Yeah, yes, and I respect him for that and give him credit for that. And either way, the bottom line is he's going to be a rich man.
Yeah, that's no doubt about that. I always tell my mom I should have played baseball, Clyde. Now, Clyde, talking about first year, of course, manager Brett Ausmus with the Tigers right now. For those that don't know, because we see him through the TV, but we still really are getting acclimated to him to see what type of personality he has. I'm sure you've been around him. What type of manager is Brad, and what conversations have you had with him?
Well, in my role, Al, and in all honesty, I have limited access to the big league manager because I'm a free agent scout and stuff, but I have met Brad, and I have seen him, and I've been around him enough, especially when he was playing. I knew him more when he was a player than since he's come back to the organization as a manager.
Right.
But I can tell you my impressions in being around him is he's very smart. He's got a tremendous dry sense of humor. He knows how to run a clubhouse. He, as a catcher, he saw the game from an excellent view, and now he, as a manager, he'll be able to use, you know, that experience to run a game. And the club seems to be really responding to him. In spring training, when I was there, they were working hard, enjoying getting out there and playing. It seemed to be a real good chemistry in that clubhouse. And I think that's a, you know, he's coming into a tough situation replacing Jim Leland, who had a real good run with the club. And and I think he kept a couple of the previous coaches with him, and Gene Lamont and Jeff Jones.
Right.
I think that was a smart move, and I think it was something that Brad thought a lot about when he did it.
Now, you know what, at the beginning of the season, of course, right now, Clyde, it was pretty cool because the first few games, I actually saw Brad come out the dugout and challenge a few calls. The first time, that, as far as the Tigers are concerned, that we've seen the use of instant replay be used in that capacity. And he actually won. He went 2-for-2 in his first calls out there that he challenged. I want to ask you, Clyde, because I've seen other calls so far throughout the season where managers are coming out and challenging plays. And, you know, some are successful, some aren't. I really love it, though, because, you know, you go to the screen, you get to see exactly what happened, and you get the call right. Are you, Clyde, an advocate for instant replay in baseball?
Yes, I am, and I'm glad that they've expanded it. We all know about Galarraga losing the perfect game due to a call that was missed at first.
And yeah.
Those things happen. There's nobody intentionally missing calls, but if we had instant replay, they could have got that right, and it would have been so wonderful for everybody, including Jim Joyce, the ump who was involved. It would have been, just a nice thing to see happen. Mm-hmm. And now that we've extended instant replay. I think those kinds of things will be avoided. And a couple things that I've been surprised about is I think it's made everybody in the game take another look at plays that maybe we were like the play at second base or the turning the double play. The one challenge that we had that we did not win, I was really surprised because in the past, when the second baseman or shortstop takes the throw to turn the double play, it's usually sort of a given. He gets the ball and he throws it to first, and we lost the challenge because they said that Romine did not have the ball long enough. And I thought, man, they've never really stressed that. Well, now with instant replay, they are enforcing that rule that the infielder has to have complete control of the ball or the runner is safe. So I think replay is going to be great. The catcher they're trying to protect at home, I think that will be the one instant replay that will get the most looks and is going to be the most controversial because of the fact that you're trying to keep the catcher from getting hurt and the base runner. And I think going forward, we're going to see the most interest, and I think they might even take a second look at that rule as the season goes.
Right, that is so true. And when you talk about that one play with Romine, Clyde, you said he didn't have the ball long enough. I mean, what constitutes as long enough?
Well, they are enforcing the rule this year, according to Joe Torre with his talk with Osmus, that when the middle infielder catches the ball, he has to not only catch it firmly in his glove, he has to take it out of his glove and show the umpire that he is ready to make the throw.
Oh, wow.
It's similar to the football play where the receiver catches the ball, and then he lands in the end zone and he's got to finish the play.
Yeah, he has to maintain full possession of it, yeah.
Exactly. And so now they're going to make the middle infielder do the same thing and have control of it. And so what it's going to constitute is it's going to force middle infielders to take a little more time to complete that double play and make sure that, you know, you don't, if you do drop the ball, it's after you've already got it cleanly out of the glove and the transfer is where you're just throwing the ball. Where, you know, the one good part about that, Al, is the old phantom second base where nobody really stays around and stays on the bag. They're not going to enforce that.
Okay, gotcha.
So
gotcha.
I think a lot of the instant replay issues are to keep the players from getting hurt.
Right, that is so true, and of course, I'm certainly an advocate for it. Like I said, you got to get the call right, and of course, it's all about player safety, especially when you talk about those turns from third base to home plate, and we see the collisions that ensue there. It can be very, very dangerous, without a doubt, Clyde. So,
yes.
All right, before I let you get out of here, Clyde, I got to ask you, of you being, of course, a Detroit Tigers scout, what Tigers are you looking at and evaluating, man? Any on the books right now?
I lost you on myself for a minute. Are you talking about current Tigers or future Tigers?
Future. I know you're traveling everywhere, looking at different players from everywhere around this town.
Yeah, right now I'm looking at high school and college games every day and writing a lot of reports.
Right.
But I would say future Tigers, you know, we do have a farm system that has got some middle infielders in Hernan and Suarez. So we do have some infielders that we feel they weren't quite ready to break camp this year. A lot of people talk about our bullpen, and we do have a right-handed pitcher named Melvin Mercedes who's pitching at Toledo who can also throw in the high 90s. So we've got some players coming. So people, I hope, understand that our farm system will continue to feed the big club. And for me personally, I'm running around seeing a lot of Big Ten, obviously, with Indiana's got a good club. They have a player named Schwarber who's probably one of the better hitters in the Big Ten.
Right.
So you're exactly right, Al. It's a busy time. It's really a tax season for the baseball scouts to get their reports in.
Yeah.
And get ready for the June 5th draft.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm pretty sure you got to be traveling everywhere, right, Clyde? Man.
Yeah, we're bouncing around and, you know, seeing games every day. And this weather makes it tough, so it's nice to be able to go to a game and I don't have to wear my hunting boots and it's fair to the players. It's so hard to evaluate a high school or college player under those conditions. It's really not fair. So with the weather breaking, it's just good news for everybody.
All right, Clyde. Well, I'll tell you what, you travel safe, buddy, and I'll definitely be seeing you soon. And also, one last thing, of course, I have to bring this up before I let you go. Of course, this whole Evan Reed situation, the investigation that hit the forefront yesterday about this whole sexual assault case. When something like this ensues with a ball club like the Tigers, Clyde, how do you think the Tigers are going to deal with this, and how big of a distraction can this become?
Well, I think if it isn't dealt with, obviously, right away, it's going to be an ongoing issue, and that's not going to be the case here, of course. And I think as an organization, we have to let the judicial system work and see what exactly happened. And that's pretty much, the way I think the club will approach this.
Right. Yes, very true. So, yeah, certainly time will tell in that regard. All right, thank you. That's Clyde Weir, scout for the Detroit Tigers. Clyde, thank you so much for joining me today.
Okay, Al, thanks for having me on.
No problem. Clyde's such a great guy. Man, I got to tell you, it's traveling as a scout. I mean, oh, my goodness, I can only imagine games every day. But, hey, it's a great time of the year to do so, and the weather's looking pretty good out there. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we'll talk about the NCAA Men's Championship last night. The UConn Huskies are national champions. How about that? It's also one historic day when it comes to one historic baseball player. You don't want to miss that. And also, Top 5 Tuesday, the top 5 worst decisions of Joe Dumars' career. Don't go anywhere. Current sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, the NCAA men's tourney is finally a wrap after yesterday's game between UConn and Kentucky in the national championship. UConn has won the national championship, ladies and gents. What a ride. What a season for them. Alex Sharg and Matt Luckey now join me to talk about the game last night. Fellas, happy Tuesday. How's everybody doing?
Happy Tuesday, Al, and I know you were shedding some tears with that song.
Yeah, man, I love that song. That song is great.
Boy, Michigan State fans were far from it, Al.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't shed a tear because Michigan State didn't win. I shed a tear because that song is so touching.
Oh, I know.
Man. Luther kills that song.
You might be the only one that probably was touched by that ceremony.
Oh,
most
no.
State fans are happy because at least it's the team that won.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying it should have been us if something happened.
Yeah, you should have seen my Twitter. Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how overshadowed this championship game was by the state of Michigan.
Right.
I mean, the state of Michigan, the fans in the state of Michigan were more worried about which team lost to the better team in the tournament than the actual championship game.
You know, I wasn't bitter last night. I mean, UConn were the better team. They deserved it. It was great to see a program going through what they went through last season. It was great to see a program like them go all the way and accomplish what they accomplished. I mean, the only thing I was upset about last night is that the only shot that they showed at Michigan State during the One Shining Moment song was Tom Izzo walking out the tunnel. I'm like, come on, Adrian Payne scored 41 points. This team was picked by Obama to win the whole thing, and all you show is Tom walking out the tunnel. Oh, that's the only thing I have. Other than that, it was a great compilation. It's always great hearing that song. I love hearing that song. But, man, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm a little sad that college basketball is over, to be honest.
I am, too. Yeah,
I mean, I know
too.
We still have the women's championship tonight, but after tonight, we're done until, what, October?
Yeah.
Until we can start talking about it again?
Yep.
It's always a sad time for me.
It is. It definitely is, guys. All right, well, let's dive right into it, fellas. UConn, it was impressive last night, too, for me. Watching that game, it seemed as though they weathered every storm, every run, every moment of momentum that Kentucky seemed to try to salvage, especially how about that young dunk? Oh, my good. I mean, especially that moment right there. I thought the momentum was completely going to shift. But how UConn responded showed a lot of maturity from them. I mean, I remember it was a one-point game. You guys remember it was a one-point game with about 8 minutes left to play. And then a timeout happens from Kevin Ollie, right? And this is kind of the quasi difference between a freshman Kentucky team composed of 5 freshman starters and a seasoned veteran team in UConn. When that timeout happened, I don't know if you guys remember, but Tracy Wolfson, she comes on the broadcast and kind of gives a recap of what happened in the UConn huddle, and she says that Shabazz Napier was like, he kind of got in the grill of all his players and said, "Hey, how bad do we want this?" And kind of just stepped up as a leader and said, "Yo, How bad do you want this? We gotta turn it up right now. And they certainly responded. That right there is that senior leadership that you just saw really come play a huge part in that game. And even this morning, I was watching Calipari's press conference, and they asked him. One of the reporters had asked him, I guess, you know, what happened with the free throws? You know what I mean? Because they came. I mean, they missed 11 free throws, which was a key component to that entire game. And Calipari, he finally, and we haven't seen him, you know, allude to this or use an excuse, if you will, because he hasn't needed to, honestly. They've won every close game. They pulled out wins. But in this moment where they lost a national championship, he went out and said it. He said, it's because we're all freshmen. They're freshmen. And that, I think them being freshmen, that youth finally reared its ugly head. And it has throughout the tournament. Let's be honest here. It has throughout moments of the tournament. But Kentucky has poured it out in those clutch moments. Last night was one of those moments where finally their luck just ran out, guys, for me.
They didn't only miss 11 free throws. They shot 54%. Because it's not like they shot 40 free throws in the game. They shot 24 free throws and missed and hit 13 of those. That, for a championship game to me, Al, is awful. There's no way that you can go into an NCAA championship and shoot that well and win a game. Mm. I mean, regardless of the misses they had against Wisconsin, although they still pulled that game out, you can't shoot 50% in a championship game. And you might make the argument that, listen, the reason they shot so poorly is because it's a big stage, they're a very young team. I don't buy that.
I don't either. That's the cop-out excuse.
It's a cop-out. Yeah. It's a championship game. You can't sit there and say it's the big stage. I mean, these guys are quote-unquote NBA ready as freshmen.
And they just played in the Final Four game. That's a huge stage, too. Yeah.
That it's because of a big stage? Come on, please. You're going to go to the NBA. That's a way bigger stage.
I agree. That's the debate they had on today's Sports Center. Yeah,
and
but
it's not
ahead.
The first time that a Calipari team has kind of, I don't know if they, I want to say choked away a title, but absolutely missed a chance at a title at the free throw line. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was kind of his MO when he was at Memphis, and it happens again here. Maybe it has something to do with the one and dones that he keeps bringing in and churning out. I don't know. But then the other side, it seems like Connecticut, and I don't have the stat on me right now, but it seems like they barely missed any free throws in the entire NCAA tournament. I mean,
yeah.
You talk about two ends of the spectrum. You have a team that shoots 54% and a team that shoots 100. And
10 for 10.
Teams don't even want to foul them at the end of the games because it's just an automatic 2 points. They were ice cold at the line, like cold-blooded, I mean, the entire tournament. I mean, that team, in the final minutes, if they had a lead, mm-hmm. they were going to hold on and win. There was no way that Napier was going to miss a big free throw. No way that Boatwright was going to miss a big free throw. Even their bigs, who aren't particularly skilled, even the big, you know, roadblock guys, they're still hitting their free throws. I mean, UConn at the free throw line was as close to automatic as you can get. And in the NCAA tournament, that goes an awfully long way, as we saw last night.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at it, you know, looking at the free throw differentials, though, I mean, even though, you know, UConn, they were perfect, 10 for 10. And you look at the other side of the spectrum, Kentucky, they shot 24 free throws. You look at UConn, they shot 10, and then Kentucky, I mean, they got to the line. If Kentucky just hits a relatively, you know, 80% from the free throw line, they win that game.
Right.
It's the little things, fellas. It's the little things in those type of moments. And, you know, again, when you look at, you talk about you brought up rebounding yesterday, Alex. That's something I really looked at yesterday, too. It was a very tight and close rebounding battle. I was very shocked because I thought UConn outplayed Kentucky's big men. And I thought that was key for me. UConn actually out-rebounded Kentucky last night by one. I couldn't believe that. And UConn, for me, what really gave them problems, you remember in that game, was when, because both defenses, they were showing each other a lot of looks. Zone, man, I mean, they were in and out of that whole thing. It looked as though when Kentucky started to run zone, UConn got a little stifled. And that's what led to that big run by Kentucky and what led to them being within 1 point. The way UConn responded to that, though, I thought was key. They slowed the game down. And for me, if you look at last night, even though Shabazz Napier, his numbers were great. He had a few uncharacteristic turnovers during that game that could have been key.
But really, was it? I don't think let's break it down. Mm-hmm. The turnover when there's, I think, 4 minutes left in the game, I think one of the Harrisons comes behind him and steals it on the right.
That one,
I don't think that's careless. I just don't think he saw
it. I thought he was tired. And one announcer brought up that because he played a lot. I thought he was tired and he was kind of out of – mentally, he wasn't there during that moment, I don't think.
I don't know, Al.
Because you remember he got taken out of the game
Right. But I don't think – yeah, he may have been tired and giving a lot of effort, but I think that was more of a Aaron Crafty-type steal because he kind of hid behind a player backcourt. He came and – yeah, don't get me wrong. Napier was probably a little gassed. He was walking the ball up the court, but it's not like Napier saw him or was or like was just like careless. He just didn't see him.
I thought it was one of those moments. He was just tired. He really was just kind of he had his head down for a moment. The thing is, I bring up that moment is because we haven't seen Shabazz Napier do that throughout the entire tournament. Normally, I mean, he knows where all ten players are on the court.
Normally, he's the one doing that.
Exactly. Normally, he's the guy on the other side of the spectrum. But I mean, the way he hit shots when they needed him to. Boatwright, it was a fun. You guys remember the push? You guys saw the push, right? Where Boatwright is coming, the play needs to be ran, and Shabazz is like, he like pushes him and says, "No, run the right play." I mean, that's just leadership there, fellas. I mean, I thought that was a cool moment to show that, you know, this is a senior laden team that knows and are so confident. That's the thing about this team. They're so poised. Even looking at the Michigan State game, remember they're down 9 points, and there's no panic from this squad. I mean, it's really unbelievable and remarkable the way UConn really, really just ran the tables throughout this entire tournament. And toughness from this team. I think that's a reflection from Kevin Ollie, because Kevin Ollie had a pretty cool quote last night. Quote, "Somebody told me we were Cinderellas. I was like, no, we're UConn. This is what we do. We are born for this. We're bred to cut down nets. We're not chasing championships. Championships are chasing us."
Yeah.
My goodness. That's great.
How about Kevin Ollie?
He's unbelievable.
How about that? Taking over Calhoun, a historic, accomplished coach, coming in as more of a rookie coach, a former player that just came out of the league. He had a lot of, I don't think the bench was set very high. I don't think that people expected him to get to where he is.
Not at all.
Especially not this fast.
Nope.
And, you know, when you talk about this whole thing, you know, replacing Calhoun, I mean, let's be honest here. Nobody wants to be the guy to replace the legend. I mean, nobody wants to fill the big shoes, if you will. I mean, that's big. I mean, that's a lot of pressure on you. And Kevin Ollie he put him on, laced him up, and said, "All right, game time." I mean, and that's the attitude he's had throughout his entire career. I mean, the countless squads he's played for, when he bounced around and everybody doubted him and said, "Hey, I don't know if Kevin Ollie's going to cut the mustard," and he just comes in and is just so confident, and he brings that attitude to his players. And then, you know, you had Shabazz, who took the mic yesterday, who was named the most outstanding player of the Final Four. He hits the mic and says, "Yo, we're the Hungry Huskies," and says that we deserve to be here. And it was such an emotional moment because those players who decided to come back to make another run at this thing, I mean, a lot of players could have transferred. They could have left. Shabazz could have left. I mean, he's a very talented player. He could have left. But they stuck around and believed in this system. And now they're national champs. I just think it's a great story. It's a great story, guys.
Great story. Real quickly, I just want to get your guys' thoughts. How about James Young?
That dunk?
A local product.
Oh, just overall?
The dunk. I mean, this guy could be a one-and-done kind of player. Statement. I mean, look at the state of Michigan high school basketball right now. There haven't really been great products coming out of the state of Michigan in a long time. So, I mean, what were your thoughts on James? Do you think he's going to leave after this year? Do you think he's going to stay?
Yes. I think he will. I think Randall will leave. The Harrison twins, I think the Harrison twins could stay around for another year. I think they need to be more polished a little bit in some aspects. But I wouldn't be surprised if they left. I mean, we've seen this happen year by year by year with Calipari's teams. I mean, they go and then he reboots and it's the same thing year by year. I think it's rumored now, I believe, guys, that he may be taking a job with the Lakers, but the Lakers organization refuted that. I don't know if that's going to happen. But, you know, it's interesting. I think Young will go, though. And, I mean, let's be honest here. That's a talented team. You know, those young cats, they balled out. I mean, you talk about UConn. Nobody expecting UConn to be in the national championship. And UConn, you guys remember that Louisville game? When they get blown out by, 30-plus points, and everybody's sitting there like, oh, there's no way UConn can make a run. And then you look at Kentucky. And looking at their up and down season and, you know, with all the freshmen, I did not have Kentucky going far at all in my bracket. I actually had them losing to Wichita State. You see what happened there. I mean, let's be honest, that was a very talented team. It has a lot of talent. I think there's a lot of guys on that team right now that can be, you know, very good contributors at the NBA level.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason they were the number one team in the country before the season started.
Right.
And that's because all these guys are projected lottery or at least first round picks. And some of them, their stock has fallen throughout the year, like specifically the Harrison twins. But I thought Young was probably the most impressive of all the freshmen. I mean, even more so than Randall, who has been the most impressive freshman on that team all year. Mm-hmm. I thought Young played better than he did last night. And maybe, you know, you talk about the stage, you talk about UConn's bigs and how good they were at kind of neutralizing him. But I think James Young, I think all those guys came into the year with the mindset that they were one and done, that they were going to go after this year. I don't know if anything has happened that would alter that trajectory. I think most, if not all of them, will go. I think maybe Willie Cauley-Stein will stay another year because of the injury, but he was already a sophomore anyway. So I think all the guys who came in, the big class, you know, the best freshman class ever, I think they're gonna be hitting the trails and going to the NBA.
I think so too. Especially, I mean, a lot of them are projected lottery picks right now. So,
right. So why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? You know what I mean? The moolah's there. So, all right, guys, let's transition to our next topic. One historic one, to say the least.
So the confrontation for the second time. Aaron walked in the second inning. He means the tying run at the plate now. But we'll see what Downing does. Al at the belt. Delivers, and he's low, ball one. And that just adds to the pressure. The crowd booing. Downing has to ignore the sound effects and stay a professional and pitch his game. One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. Moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at home plate not only by every member of the Braves, but by his father and mother. He threw his arms around his father, and as he left the home plate area, his mother came running across the grass, threw her arms around his neck, kissed him for all she was worth. As Aaron circled the bases, the Dodgers on the infield shook his hand, and that was a memorable moment. Aaron is being mobbed by photographers. He is holding his right hand high in the air, and for the first time in a long time, that poker face of Aaron shows the tremendous strain and relief of what it must have been like to live with for the past several months. It is over. At 10 minutes after 9 in Atlanta, Georgia, Henry Aaron has eclipsed the mark set by Babe Ruth.
Wow. What a moment in sports. Today marks the 40th anniversary of Hank Aaron's 715th home run, passing Babe Ruth as the all-time home run king. That was Vin Scully with the call through the radio airwaves. Pretty cool, just to kind of just capsulate this moment, fellas, in Sports Illustrated today, it reads, Aaron, quote, Aaron, then 40, tied Ruth's record with his 714th career homer in his very first at-bat of the season. He went 0-for-5 with a walk and two strikeouts the rest of the series against the Reds. On the first pitch of first at-bat of his first home game of the 1974 season, Aaron broke the record, a solo shot off of Al Downing, who had a long and excellent career himself. Now, as you can imagine, Aaron received death threats for months, leading up to the record-breaking homer. Newspapers actually reportedly prepared obituaries in case Aaron was murdered in the days leading up to or just after breaking the record. He also received a lot of support from fans and the media alike. He finished the 1974 season with 20 homers, his lowest total since his rookie season in 1954. He played two more years and retired with 755 career home runs, a record that stood until Barry Bonds hit his 756th homer in 2007. Ruth's record stood for 39 years. What a moment, fellas. What a moment. It was a great call by Vin Scully, actually, when Aaron played it for me, and to see the picture that Vin actually, you know, painted for everybody who listened to that moment. I mean, Henry Aaron, I mean, what more can be said about the man? He's such a class act. The way he carried himself throughout his career. He really was a big component in the assimilation of African Americans in the game of baseball and in sports in general. And to deal with that adversity, the racist threats that he received when embarking on that record, death threats, I mean, he's unbelievable.
Look, there's an argument made today that you have gyro balls, dice K balls, way more moving on pitchers, players having, you know, juicing up today, that it's a way more complex game of baseball than it was when Henry Aaron played. However, that the factors that aren't weighed in are the racism, are the fact that he played in the South, where if you've ever watched the movie with Jackie Robinson or any other baseball films about racism in the South, it is not an easy place to play in. That alone counters that argument, and that it's a way more complicated and way more it's a more tough game and a more complicated game today than back then, because I think the racism is constantly overshadowed. And look, regardless if Hank Aaron isn't facing against the Dice K and all these new pitches, he still had 700 home runs. That's an amazing accomplishment. It's a great day for Hank Aaron. So
yeah, the cultural hardship, like you said, Alex, the cultural hardship and the doors that he opened for others in the game, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost sad that, you know, when he talks about it, the things he focuses on are those negative aspects, mm-hmm. you know, the death threats, the threats to him and his family. I mean, that offseason where he's knocking on the door of Ruth's record must have been the longest offseason of his life. I mean, right. I can't imagine going through something like that where you have all this negative attention from people who are, you know, obviously pretty close-minded and set in their ways. And it's just for stuff you're doing on the field. Right. I mean, it's not like you're doing anything that directly infringes on them, other than that, you know, they just don't want to see a black man break one of the greatest records in professional sports.
Right.
I mean, it's mind-boggling to think that he went through that and still persevered and came through. And obviously, you know, his record now is broken, but, you know, there's the asterisk there with Barry Bonds and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But just to the struggle that he had to go through just for being as successful as he was is crazy. And to think that, you know, he had to deal with all this stuff. He couldn't even enjoy it.
He couldn't even enjoy
you know, counting down. I'm this much closer to the record. He's almost dreading it more than he's enjoying the accomplishment.
Right.
It is crazy, and it takes away from it, I think. And I think now that we look back at it, it's, you know, it's this great day. But for him, I'm sure, you know, and like he said, like even Vin Scully said, the poker face of strain and relief.
Exactly.
I mean, the fact that that's in the call when he hits the home run
right.
is insane.
It's crazy. Yeah, like you said, I was just about to bring it up. I mean, Vin Scully's his call of it. I mean, just to see the rejoicing from his mom and dad. I mean, they were rejoicing because finally it's over.
It's over.
I mean?
Exactly.
It's over.
This whole circus, finally it's over. It's
right.
done.
Right.
It happened.
Ah, what a moment, though. Man, 40 years ago on this day. Historic stuff. All right, guys, we got about 5 minutes left in the show. Our top five Tuesday subject focuses on Joe Dumars, who is reportedly stepping down, will be stepping down sometime this week as his affiliation with the as Pistons president. Expected to resign before his contract expires, of course, on July 1st. So our top five Tuesday today is the worst moves in Joe Dumars' career. I guess, guys, I'll start it off. Number five for me was trading Aaron Aflalo. I'm going to go with Aaron Aflalo because I thought, looking at Aaron Aflalo, I mean, when they got him on the team, you could see some potential there. You could see that this kid, if you know, with some little fine-tuning of the fundamentals, he could really blossom and be one heck of a player. But they trade him to Denver, and now he's unbelievable. He's really blossomed into a very, very good player now. That's five for me. Number four, the re-signing of Richard Hamilton. That was another one for me. Richard did not want to be there after Chauncey Billups had left. Of course, Chauncey was traded, which is my number. I'll combine four and three right now. My number three is trading Chauncey Billups for Allen Iverson. I thought that was a terrible, terrible move. Chauncey, of course, a great player. You know, during that time, he still could contribute and give you great minutes and still put the ball in the bucket. And once that happened, once Chauncey left, Richard didn't want to be there. I mean, it was definitely apparent. I remember he got into it with the coach at the time, who was it Curry, I think it was? And then it just that total demise. Why would you re-sign someone who doesn't want to be part of your organization? Makes no sense to me. Number two. Passing up on the Rajon Rondo deal back in 2009, that was big for me. The Boston Celtics, they floated the idea of trading Rondo and Ray Allen to the Pistons for Rip, Tayshaun, and Rodney Stuckey. Man, I wish that move would have happened. My goodness. Now, according to the reports, the Pistons quickly rejected the idea. Again, that was in 2009. And, of course, drafting Darko Milicic. I don't even need to explain that one, fellas. Matt.
All right, my list. Darko is actually just an honorable mention.
Really?
I feel like I almost have to give him a pass because the entire league thought that Darko was a cannot-miss prospect. Mm. LeBron's already off the board.
So he drank the Kool-Aid.
Everyone was drinking the Kool-Aid. The entire league thought Darko Milicic was the second coming. So, yeah, he was the guy who gets all the flack for it. But I feel like 9 out of 10 GMs in that situation would have done the exact same
thing. You think so?
Absolutely.
I don't know. What if that was a psych out? What if they wanted the Pistons to draft Darko, so they all were like, it's a can't miss. You got to get him.
Yeah, but and not other GMs were the – it's not like the GMs were the ones telling Joe Dumars, yeah, this guy's can't miss. It was scouts. It was, you know, media types. It was everyone.
But still, Carmelo got just as much as hype. Well, Dwayne Wade didn't. But,
yeah,
I mean,
but, you know,
Carmelo was there.
This is the year after they draft Tayshaun. You know, they already have their three
That's
of the
few. That was the thinking
so
behind
fit, the fit of Darko is much more natural than Melo would have been.
All right.
I realize in hindsight –
man, I'm going to have to take
worst
that away on this
ever.
One.
This sounds like a Barbershop Wednesday, guys.
It does sound like
it
a Barbershop
does.
Wednesday. I think he gets almost too much flack for that because everyone was buying the Darko stock.
Okay, what's yours look like, man?
Number five, I have Aaron Aflalo because they traded him for a second rounder that turned into Vernon Macklin. Nobody knows who that is. Number four, I'm going to go signing Josh Smith and thinking it would work when you already have Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond on the interior. Mm-hmm. Number three, I have the Chauncey trade and not trading Rip. Because Chauncey kind of held that locker room together.
He completely eroded
when he left. I also have the Rip signing lumped in there as well.
Yep.
Number two, firing Rick Carlisle.
Yeah.
Never should have done it. Never should have done
I
it.
I agree.
They can't keep a coach for more than 2 years ever since. I mean, Larry Brown was never going to stay for long term.
Nope.
Rick Carlisle's been with Dallas since 2008.
Rick Carlisle won
a title there and is now one of the best coaches in the NBA.
I agree.
After that, you know, they go Curry, Kuster, Frank, Cheeks, and now Lawyer. It's just a terrible list. Mm-hmm. Number one, it's got to be signing Charlie Villanueva and Ben Gordon. Each
That's
for 5 years. Charlie V for $35 million and Ben Gordon for $55 million. That is
yeah. That's
horrific.
Crazy, right? That's I don't know what the thing. You know, I actually looked at that one, too, and I'm like, ah. But I see where you're going with
That's
that
one
because that was big. Alex.
All right, I'll go real quickly. I actually have Billups as an honorable mention because at the time, the idea was good regardless if Iverson worked out. You trade the cap. They wouldn't probably have made a trade without – we'll get into that at Barbershop Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But I think that's – was at the time, it was a good idea. Number five, I have signing Tracy McGrady. I mean, they expected to come in with a starting role. He was in the starting lineup for a little bit. Kind of an aged and peppered McGrady. I thought that was kind of like a desperation kind of signing. Aflalo, I also have – number three, I don't have Ben Gordon because he was very productive, but I just have giving Villanueva $35 million. Not signing, but actually giving him this amount of money.
Right, right.
As much as Gordon had 55, but I think he had a little bit more number, a little bit better numbers to prove.
Gotcha.
Number two, I also have Carlisle, and then I have Darko. The Dark Curse at number one.
Yes, Darko is that. That was just bad. And yeah, I think, you know, the move, before we wrap up, the move to sign, to get Allen Iverson and the Tracy McGrady move, I think that was an economical move to try to get butts in the seat because those used to be two big names. But all right, but yeah, we can definitely debate. I want to debate about that. Anyway, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's Current Sports. Thanks to Clyde Weir, Detroit Tiger Scout, for joining me today. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKRX Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Tuesday. And be easy, people.